Welcome to the Health Ranger Report here on Brighteon.tv. I'm Mike Adams, your host, and I'm the founder of Brighteon. Today, we have a brand new guest for you, and you're going to really enjoy this conversation because it's an expert in bioterrorism who also understands how to use trace metals such as copper and zinc to protect yourself from biological weapons that might be released or might have already been released on our world. And use your imagination, you can probably think of some. Now, as you know, I'm a big advocate of silver, and my organization manufactures colloidal silver using custom circuitry and Texas rainwater and everything else. But silver is only one of several elements that have extraordinary properties, natural antimicrobial properties, and much more. So our guest today is Tao Braun. He's going to be joining us right after this break to talk about copper and zinc and what you can do to use this right now to help protect yourself and stay safe. All right, welcome back, folks. Today we are joined now by Dr. Tao Braun from biochemscience.com. He's a bioterrorism expert. He understands the role of trace metals such as copper and zinc, and he has, in fact, formulated a spray and kind of an approach that you can, there's a DIY approach that you can use yourself as well on how to help protect yourself and your environment in the event that you're exposed to biological weapons or other pathogens that might pose a risk to you and your family. So Dr. Braun, thank you so much for joining us today. It's an honor to have you on, sir.
It's an honor. Mike, thank you so much. First of all, this is a great opportunity for me to thank you for everything that you've been doing prior to the pandemic and, of course, during the pandemic to keep people safe. My work revolves around security and safety and keeping people safe from human-made attacks, regardless of weapon. And so I'm always absolutely grateful that it takes a village. And in this case, it takes brave people like yourself, people that are willing to sometimes broach uncomfortable topics, unpopular topics. I found a characteristic amongst all people that have been, the people that have been helping the most during this pandemic. None of you seem to care, about being popular or whether you're going to be invited back to somewhere, or whether you're the popular, person on the block. I think that your integrity, around truth, is both vital in terms of winning this war and then not only winning it, but thriving afterwards. Truth will always set people free.
Thank you for that, Dr. Braun. Look, we don't care about being popular. We care about saving lives. And we also understand, and I think you share this with those of us who are on, let's say the pro-human side of all of this, people like Dr. Robert Malone and Peter McCullough and so many others. We want people to be safe and we want to share information. We're not hiding information. We're not coveting information. We're not saying you can't use this. We're saying please use this. And so that's one of the reasons I invited you on today, because you are very open about sharing your knowledge and you have extensive knowledge in this. So let me begin by asking, just give us a little background of your bioterrorism background. So just to establish your area of knowledge that led to the development of what we're going to talk about next.
All right. So the quick milestones over here is that I was previously trained as a formal clinical psychologist with always a slant towards the medical model and understanding pathology and understanding how the mind and body work together and also understanding the sort of societal both in terms of trends, stigmatization of people, labeling of people, and then both either a heavy-handed approach to mental illness or too much of a light-handed approach. And so that took me into the world post 9/11, where I started concentrating on a very specific topic, which was violence prevention. And then even more specific than that, I'm considered a I don't really like the term subject matter expert, but it's what people use. I'm the go-to guy on the topic of how to prevent and respond to tragedies like like the one that just took place in Texas and the one that just took place in Buffalo and California. And so for the last few years, I've really been the keynote speaker and main trainer on the circuit that trains agencies, law enforcement, public health officials, and emergency management to integrate their approach on the mostly on the response side. But what I've been really pushing for is the prevention. And so when the pandemic started, I saw it as an extension of that work when I had clients that were starting to get information and things weren't really matching up. And there was, you know, already suspicion that this could be lab made. And so, of course, the questions that I was getting is, Doc, is this biowarfare? Is this lab made? And then I, you know, switched gears in terms of part that I teach is never fixate on the weapon. And you know, you've got to leave room for attackers using all kinds of weapons. And in this case, I had to switch gears and make sure that I understood this particular weapon that they were using and what could come next.
Did you offer a conclusion, by the way? I'm curious about whether the lab origins were viable and documented, or what were you telling your clients, or what did you ultimately conclude?
It became very apparent very quickly that this was man-made. It took me, it didn't take long at all. It took maybe a month or two of unpacking sort of the stuff that is now commonplace of what patents were out there, who was working on what, why is this working in a certain way. And the biggest question I had, which led me to understand the spike protein, was I had no idea why this particular coronavirus was causing the type of inflammatory response that it was. The original image that I had put out on social media in trying to get people to understand that the spike protein was the main culprit here was a medieval mace, where you had the handle and you had a chain, and then you had, you know, the spikes on the end of a ball. And I said, you know, everybody's concentrating on the device, the delivery method, the viral platform. But that viral platform is just to deliver a payload, and that payload is on the spike proteins. And I started looking at other coronaviruses, and very quickly information was starting to come out around the toxicity of the spike protein alone, and then the genomic sequence was known, and people started mapping out what that would look like and isolating the different peptides. And of course, you know, just the weirdness around the response the sort of rumors that were starting to circulate already about a lab leak out of Wuhan, and sort of this hyper focus, when those that know this subject know that Wuhan is one of hundreds of labs that work on these products. And so just the fixation alone on one place. And then, Mike, something that I'll just add to it is that the biggest suspicion for me is that I'm not a virologist. I'm certainly not an epidemiologist. I'm not even a medical doctor. My background is a clinical psychologist that's always been interested in science and always been interested in why people do bad stuff. And so a huge giveaway that should have been obvious to anybody was looking at the original video footage that was coming out of Wuhan. I don't believe any person on the planet had ever seen a virus acting like a nerve gas, where literally someone's fine and they're standing in the street, and the next thing there's something that looks like it's an episode of syncope or fainting, but it's not fainting. And then why did that happen, and why is this happening in certain areas and not in other areas? And so the whole thing clearly, and people like yourself have known this since the beginning, it's off. The narrative has never made sense to anybody.
I'd like to ask you if you're willing to respond to this Texas shooting in Uvalde. And it turns out that it appears that this shooter, Ramos, was arrested 4 years previously as a juvenile. And he and another friend were charged with conspiracy to commit murder because they were modeling themselves after the Columbine shooting. They had drawings and writings that they wanted to carry out the exact same thing in their own high school during their senior year, which was four years later, which is today. And we can't prove that this is the same person, by the way, so I just want to be clear about that. But from your professional opinion, how is it that any young teen like that can have such pre-planning and forethought of wanting to carry out mass murder of innocent people that's on their mind for 4 years before they actually do carry it out. How does that happen?
So strangely, first of all, there's, if anybody actually wants to see a long extended answer of what I'm about to say in the most concise way possible, there is 2.5 hours of testimony that I did for the Texas Senate, where they invited me on the subject of mass killing after an attack in Texas, and they put a committee together, and I gave 2.5 hours laying out the current science and model that would be preventing these tragedies. That is available on the Senate's website, as well as the fact that I could make it available to you as part of a link over here if anybody wants to go.
Yeah, I would appreciate that video. We would like to post that on Brighteon and do a story about that. Yes.
Now, I also want to add a part to it, because I think something that I've done over during this pandemic is I was a much nicer person by the traditional definition of niceness before this pandemic. I have very little tolerance now for the human beings that derail true science and true effective methods for their own political or financial agendas. I have zero tolerance for it. So what I want people to see, I want them to see the 2.5 hour testimony, and then I want to see them that the Senate went to break, and then I want to see that the a non-invited member of the public came up, and immediately after my 2.5 hour testimony, which one of the senators said it was the best testimony on any subject that she's ever participated in, I want them to see that this person gets up and goes, I just want to say that I've got major concerns about Dr. Braun's information that he gave today. And I will personally be contacting the Texas school safety, the head of school safety for the entire state. And I will make sure that he has nothing to do with school safety in Texas. And this person, in their 2 minute or whatever, 3 minutes that were given to them as a member of the public, had enough clout politically. The first picture I saw of her on social media was her, with Nancy Pelosi, enough clout that she literally got me deleted and canceled, as one of the, not only national, global experts on this subject. She just got me canceled. That's all it took.
Wow. So hold on a second. Back up. So you know that there are solutions to prevent and halt these school shootings before they happen.
Not only do I know, there's an entire science that has been dedicated to this for over 40 years, that is the science of threat assessment and threat management. They are world leaders on this subject. On the commercial and sort of non-academic side, Gavin DeBecca has been the leading expert. He remains the leading expert in threat management. He provides the security details for the same people that are out there saying that there isn't a method. These people have all the protections that our schools and families and anybody in any public deserve, but they never get there because people with political agendas absolutely will never let these methods through. They just will continually chase gun control.
We are baffled here. I'm a Texan. I live in Texas, and Uvalde's not that far from where I am. We are baffled why in Texas it's the Democrats that block all of this. They do not want police or security in the schools. They also do not want to really have mental health assessments based on the way teenagers look. But there is a look, there's a way they dress, there's a way they wear their hair, there's the way they use their eyes, facial expressions, body language, posture. All of these things, sometimes you can look at a teen and say, my God, that teen is really into Satanism or demonic or death. That's not discrimination, is it? Those are observations that count.
Well, they're observations, but here's the scientist in me, right? If you started rounding up people based on how they looked or their posturing or even the stuff that, music that they might be listening to, I would say that you're going to be overreaching into human beings that might not have any nefarious activity. However, if you tell me that you're concerned about something because of the total set of circumstances that you have in front of me, including the thing that I was that I should have said right off the bat before the whole Texas testimony piece, which is that the biggest issue when you asked about how this stuff happens and the mental illness component is that if somebody cannot leave their house because they have an obsession or a compulsion, whether it's hand washing, hand wringing, paranoid thoughts, you know, that they can only walk on a certain, you know, left-handed side of the curb. And if they walk by mistake on the right, it throws them off for a day. We call that OCD. We know that obsessive compulsive thoughts can be so debilitating that it is one of the hardest forms, for someone to have a functional life. So how come we are uncomfortable giving the term OCD when it relates to homicidal thoughts? Right?
Right.
If somebody is preoccupied, and 4 years is nothing, by the way, yeah, the planning, the idea that this just happens, that atrocious term that people use, that the person snapped, you've got to know that somebody can be obsessed for their entire lifetime with the idea that their final act on this planet is going to be a homicide suicide. And ultimately the there's such a parallel here, which is why this, I get really, really, frustrated, annoyed, and I'm downright obnoxious to people that say to me, I don't understand. Why are you offering solutions for the pandemic? Why are you, giving out protocols? You're not a medical doctor. Because there are similarities, because the pandemic is a mass killing by perpetrators that are just functional versions of these murderers. They are hot. The more resources and capabilities someone has, and the right. higher functionality they have as a human being, the more body count that they can get. And I'll just say this flat out with regard to him deciding to sue me, because I would love him to try to sue me, because then I'd put him in court. I can absolutely tell you that in my opinion, Bill Gates is a highly functional, masculine, no different from Stephen Paddock that went up into Vegas on the 32nd floor, or James Holmes in Arizona, or this latest killer, or anybody else that shouldn't be named. I can tell you that he is absolutely fits. I'm never really interested in how somebody looks clothing wise or their artistic. It is their basic biology. It is their inability to be human. It's the inability to have empathy. It's a giveaway smirk called duper's delight. It's choice of words. When somebody says, unfortunately, the natural immunity is better than the vaccine. They say, and wow. they use the word sadly. Sadly, the natural immunity is better than the vaccine.
So I know we're off topic here, Dr. Braun, and we're going to get back to copper and zinc, because that's why I invited you on. But real quick, let me ask you, since you mentioned Bill Gates, remember that Gates and other globalists, they have a very elaborate justification mental process where they tell themselves that the Earth has a limited carrying capacity, which has been exceeded. And therefore, in order to literally save the human race, I mean, they think of themselves as godlike saviors, they must oversee a sharp reduction in the number of human beings who are currently alive. So you talk about justifying killing billions of people. We're talking about thousands of times larger than the Holocaust of World War II. That was 6 million. We're talking 6 billion. That's 1,000 times larger. But they have an internal justification for that. What do you say to that?
I say that you're on the first letter of the acronym that Gavin De Becker put out to the world, which is called JACA, J-A-C-A, and justification is the first stage of the trajectory of violence. And so what's interesting is that when people are shocked that this could be going on, or even they're in denial, they have to ask themselves, is there a way that people can create a justification that feels and looks and can be explained in a form of morality? And this is why this is taking place. This is the Socratic noble lie. Now, I want to say that may be true for all of the moral people that have gone along with this. I'm going to say that I don't believe that's the case for Bill Gates. I think that when I look at somebody like Bill Gates, I look at him and I compare him to some of the monstrous people who have worked an entire life for an end goal that has got nothing. It's just like the level of their lives are dictated by functional pieces that allow them to ultimately get their own goal achievement. And his goal achievement, in my opinion, is body count. And I think that he uses a moral justification of sustainability or human health, but I don't, it, because it works and it's also profitable. And the more profit he makes allows him, right, to get to the point of resources to get to the end goal. But the end goal, in my opinion, is what I call soul collectors. I think that Bill Gates will suicide. And I think that, you look at the split between him and Melinda, and you look at the blatant body language of discomfort that she's got in every interview. She reminds me of an abuse, of a domestic violence, and there's always an element of domestic violence. She has been his enabler, right? He's not functional as a human enough to create social connections. Or to have the empathy that would allow him to ever become successful. He has built a team around him to compensate for his non-human ability. And she knows that she has been, over a lifetime, his greatest enabler of his big project, which is ultimately, in my opinion, and this is where it gets to the point where I always say, here's the part that I can't prove. Here's the part that becomes theoretical and just opinion, and I'm fine with that. The psychologist in me knows that Freud would absolutely be applauding when I say that his obsession is just to get daddy's approval. Even if daddy's long gone, there is that profile that you're talking about, more importantly than clothing just how they're walking around with their heads down, whatever it is. The profile is psychopaths have no ability to connect in an empathetic way, and they generally have fathers that are either completely absent, both physically, but more damaging, or those that are there but not able to connect at all. And so what these sons do, if they have the genetic predisposition to be a psychopath, the sons work to have a final act of legacy that is unavoidable in terms of getting attention. And so what I love is even an interview. I'm very, very choosy about the words that I listen out for. And there's even an interview with Gates, a recent interview where he's got Melinda next to him and he's talking about smallpox and he's talking about the next epidemic. And he goes, and maybe this one will get their attention.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. It's super creepy.
Right. Whose attention?
It's like Dr. Evil.
That's exactly it. It is when you look at somebody like this last atrocity, it is absolutely always right up in everyone's faces. It is the denial that this person is capable of what would be these heinous acts that allows them, to eventually commit the atrocity. I'll tell you, as a Texan, what should really, really anger any human being, but especially a Texan, is that over 50 years ago, Charles Whitman went up into the Texas Tower in Austin, right? And he did a mass killing that has driven all the mass killings since then. And it has also led to the development of the SWAT teams. And it was a big moment in Texas history.
I'm sorry to interrupt, Dr. Braun, but stay with us. We got to wrap up this segment here on Brighttown.tv. There's much more to this conversation. I have a feeling we're going to be talking a lot about a number of topics. But for those of you watching today on Brighttown.tv, thank you for watching. Be sure to check out the full-length interview with Dr. Braun on Brighttown.com. My channel is HR Report. And also visit his website, biochemscience.com, for his solutions involving copper and zinc. Thank you for watching today. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Take care.